mundo. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Gestalten podcast presented to you by Concept House Pathfinder, your number one online resource for the best students and recent graduates for your internships and entry-level positions. My name is Martin Groschwald, and in this episode, I am welcoming Alain Launay, the head of design for Renault in India, and we had a lovely little conversation based around the topic of designing on a budget for markets such as India, but he also worked in Korea for Renault over there. So he had a lot to tell us about the process itself, what you have to do and what you have to understand when you're designing on a budget, how you have to understand the market, and of course, the cultural differences. So enough talking from my side. Enjoy the conversation with Alain, and here we go. Alain, thank you very much for taking the time and for being part of this episode of the Gestalten podcast, and welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Martin.
Very well. I wanted to have a conversation with you because obviously, you know, you're working for Renault, you're based in a studio in Mumbai in India, and there was a topic that came onto my mind, you know, a few weeks ago that I thought like, I really would like to discuss, and this is, you know, designing on a budget, designing for budget cars. And obviously you're working in a market in India, which is heavily crowded by budget cars. I've had a number of conversations with other people in the past that have said India is probably one of the most difficult markets to, you know, succeed as a car manufacturer. So just to jump into that kind of conversation right now, you've been in India for quite a long time in 2020. What is your feeling about a market such as India when it comes to budgets on a car? How is the car seen in an area such as India?
Well, the car is very important for Indians. I mean, still aspirational objects, you know. In Europe, we are pretty much bored, and the car is has been thing. In India, this is still a symbol of freedom, a symbol of progress, a symbol of status, of course. So people really desire to buy a car, first of all, or to buy a new car if they already had one. So it is very important. And when you go to get your new car at a dealership, it is a ceremony. It is a celebration, which is amazing. You know, you bring your priest with you to bless the car and the whole family and so on. I mean, it is really an event.
And what does this mean for you? I mean, this is a very interesting kind of concept. It's obviously a cultural concept as well. Does this have any kind of impact on you as a creative, as a designer, on how you design the cars? That you know, this is the standard, and like, you know, how they almost like, you know, cherish the car.
Well, the thing is that on one hand, we all know that the customers have a limited budget, but they have very high aspiration. So you cannot sell anything less than a car. And I think recently there was the Tata Nano, who was an amazing concept, but who failed commercially because it was less than a car in a, mm-hmm. in a way. And that's how people perceived it. People really want everything that's in a car, and every extra equipment is very highly valued by the customer. And so the real difficulty is to give enough to the people within the limited budget.
Mm. Well, you just mentioned obviously the Tata Nano as well, which, you know, had in good and bad, I leave it up to the listener and the people, you know, the cheapest car in the world in that kind of sense. And when we talk about cheap prices, we have to obviously make an understanding that it's cheap to, let's say, European standards, of course. Yeah. But when we look into Europe, we have cars that are considered to be on the lower end, which is like the Dacia Duster, Logan, those kind of cars. So I don't want to focus that much on the budget itself, but I would rather want to focus on the conversation. And just like, when you get this briefing from, in your kind of sense, let's say Lawrence van den Acker, and he comes up to you and says, like, you know, Alon, we need a car for the Indian market, and this is the kind of price range that we're going to be looking towards, like, you know, what we have to do. In the first kind of instance, what is the biggest challenge for you as a designer when you see this is what we're supposed to do, and this is where we have to, where we have to end on?
Well, actually, it's a very rewarding experience. I will take the other opposite. Is that I worked also on a Renault High Range, and when you're on a High Range, you really want to challenge a Rolls Royce and to have everything in it, and then as the process goes along, you just cut and cut and cut, and you are basically losing a little bit every day, and you save what you can, because at the end of the day, you cannot make more than a Rolls Royce when you are doing a Renault High Range. When you work on a budget car, it's actually the opposite. I mean, the first Logan design was not even something anybody was looking at. You know, design was not a sales point, was not an argument. So, my friend Benoit Jacob, he did a fantastic job, but and he was very satisfied for it, but it was not expected from him. Then, little by little, people understood that even that kind of car can be bought because people like it. And Duster was a great example. I mean, but in Duster, we started with the same thing. Nobody was expecting anything from design. And so, every little thing, every little improvement you could do to the design was a victory. And we went from victory to victory until we got a car that actually people like. They also like the design. So it's a totally different experience. On the High Range, you are sort of on a defensive step every day, and in a budget car, you are like on a winning streak every day, and that's a very nice experience actually for a designer.
How do you think, as a designer yourself, that starting in this kind of, you know, let's say, feeling that the design is not expected to be mind blowing. It's more a feature rather than a sales point in those regards. Do you think that it takes a special kind of designer to flourish in that as well? Because I could personally imagine that a lot of people, like, you know, they deal maybe better with direction. Some other people are a little bit better with less direction. But on these kind of budget cars, I can very well see that maybe you don't need a traditional stylist. You actually need a designer, because every decision that you make has such a massive impact on your day-to-day activity, pretty much, and the communication that you have with other colleagues in engineering, marketing, sales, and all these things.
Well, you need designers who are able to question themselves. And I think as a team, you need a mix of very experienced people and then very fresh people, which is what we have in India, for example. I mean, I have a team of very fresh people, and then we have a couple of very experienced designer, and we have some help from very experienced designer from France. And it is that mix, because you need to be able to, you know, think for totally fresh design, and then you need people who are able to see what is actually possible. not to cut your own wings, but to be extremely practical.
Is that a problem? Would you say if I look into, like, you know, new ideas such as Instagram, social media, do you think that pragmatism that is required to do these kind of cars is missing with a newer generation because we have this flashy culture, especially in terms of representation of designers at the moment?
Well, any new designer, I mean, you are not born a car designer, you don't know everything, and luckily for people like me, you know, years of experience mean something, and you need that that mix of experiences on a job. The people, yeah, on one hand, you have to be ready, you know, not to be afraid of anything, and that's something that in India is very nice. The young Indian designers, they are eager to discover the car world. They don't have all the culture that we have, so they are not afraid of anything, and that's very nice. But then you have to take that and sort what is actually feasible, what can fit, and what and abandon what you will not be able to do.
I find this really interesting, you know, especially what you mentioned just now with the young people. Would you let me be a little bit maybe provocative on this one? Do you think if you would bring a European or like a Western or a Chinese designer, a young designer coming straight out of university now, and you would bring these guys or girls to India, do you think they could succeed in understanding this Indian market, this kind of, let's say, being a little bit less reliant on the history of a brand?
I mean, if you take a freshman from Europe and you throw him in India, I think it would be very difficult for him to cope, and it takes a while to understand actually what is the lack of car culture that exists there and how you can help to bridge that. You know, when I'm in India, half of my job is to explain to the French people why the Indian answer to some question is like that. And the other half of my job is to explain to the Indian designers why the feedback they got from France is like that. You know, we as European, we tend to think that we are very clear and easy and transparent for the rest of the world, and that the rest of the world is a mystery. But actually, we are as much as a mystery for them than they are for us. So it really goes both ways.
So when you work on a product, and you obviously with your experience, you know that there's a certain, call it a cultural gap, a knowledge gap with all of these designers. And you already have the challenge to work on a budget car, which in my opinion is one of the toughest thing you can do when it comes, if not even the toughest, when it comes to transportation design. How do you start about this? How do you find the mix in your design team to work with them on the sense like, look, I know we have some restrictions, but let's be the most creative we can and the most understanding, especially now that riding on the success wave of something like the Duster, the expectations on design, even on low budget cars, is becoming more and more increasing.
Yeah, the first thing I do is to give them a maximum of freedom and to push them to take that freedom, because you can imagine that those guys who have, you know, when they were born, they were only ambassadors in the street, this old Morris thing, and then they had the first, you know, the first Suzuki coming, and that is their world, and they want something that they have seen in the latest magazine, you know, that's the first thing. So there is a kind of self-restriction that they do, or actually what they would like to have is the latest thing that they've seen in the magazine. So the first thing is that I have to explain them that that's not what I expect from them. What I expect from them is to design the car that will be in the magazine 3 years from now, not today. So I'm pushing them to take more freedom that they would actually do normally, or not to fulfill their immediate dream, but to fulfill the dream that they will have tomorrow.
And if you take that a little bit further, is that a problem, or not necessarily say a problem, but is that sometimes a bigger challenge than expected? Because, you know, especially when you're in an environment, and we can talk about China about this one as well, but I would say India is very similar, where products are being put onto a market relatively quickly. You know, is that a challenge with the people, that they're not falling too far behind, or just looking too much into like what's happening now rather than looking up front?
Yeah, it's a problem. It's always a challenge that we have to face. So we have to find ways to unlock that, and then of course you get things that are so far out that you have to bring them back, because as you said, you know, we have to design for a budget and at a budget. So design to cost is obviously a big part of the job as well. But also what is interesting with those projects, and since the Logan, is that everybody is trying to do the same thing. I used to say that when you are in this team of global access cars, you are part of a cult. That means that everybody is sharing the same vision, and whether it's from logistic to purchase to engineering to design, we are all trying to do the same thing. So I'm challenging the engineers because they are too expensive, and they are challenging the designers because they are too expensive. And we are all trying to progress in the same direction.
It's interesting that you say, like, on the budget, obviously the teamwork is much more important in a greater context. Would you say in this kind of budget environment, it's because of people have to come together, you know, in a much tighter way, it's also easier to make decisions? Is it easier to make these decisions to reach a goal? Or would you say, based on your own, you know, past experience also at Renault with like the higher end cars, it's sometimes easier to go into that kind of route? Because I can imagine, if you know, we all work on a budget, then let's get the best thing done for the budget is maybe an easier, you know, level that everybody can agree on than if you work on, I don't know, like, you know, a high level car.
I would say in general, yes. In general, yes, because again, the people who are embarking on that experience, they know, you know, what they are here for, and again, there is that shared vision. And also we know that if you have to break some rules, eventually you can do it if it's to get the right result. You know, the genius of Mr. Schweitzer when he commissioned the Logan was that not only he wanted that very special kind of car, but he also understood that, to achieve it, could not be done by using the usual process. Mm-hmm. And he set it a completely different team, completely different way of working to achieve that goal. And that's why they succeeded, actually.
And how does this new process or this different kind of thinking affect the design that you work in every single day?
It does, because we are trying to find solutions in the broader sense. I mean, we are not only doing styling, but we are also challenging the engineering, and it goes both ways. You know, we accept some challenge, and then we set up some challenges for for the others. And then again, the team is a team in the broader sense. It embraces all of the areas of the company, and the global vision is shared by everyone. And also that's how we can do, you know, really innovative product. I mean, we came up with the Quid in India, which was actually for real initiated in India. And the basic package of the Quid was what you could find on the very small Volkswagen Seat of the time. You know, it was what was like a small urban toolbox. And then it became a small SUV, which was totally unexpected. But that is something that that came from the interaction with the young designers in India.
I find this interesting that you say this, because, you know, there's not a lot of stories out there where, you know, the let's say the design department, especially coming from areas that are, in my opinion, still underrated, such as India, also China is part of this as well, Korea, and obviously you have worked in Korea as well, you know, have stepped up the game quite a bit with in particular what Kia and Hyundai have been doing. Do you foresee, I mean, obviously India is a massive country, there's a lot of development that's potentially to be happening there, but do you foresee that design ideas that come out of India because of mega cities, because of, you know, space issues and all these kind of things, could have a fundamental impact on what we do over here in Europe? And obviously what you've just mentioned a little bit now is that it already had an impact on the design side from India to Renault in France, of course, as well. But do you think there is this potential coming out of India at the moment that they could have this massive role worldwide or globally?
I really believe so, although even they may not know it. You know, I'm following and LinkedIn discussions on the autonomous car subjects and also the new mobility and everything. And it strikes me that there are so many of those, you know, people thinking about the new mobility who actually describe something which is the rickshaw. You know, a small vehicle which is made to, you know, compact, agile, which can load almost anything and move in the city center at a slow speed. And really what they are describing is the rickshaw, safety features apart, of course. And when you see the congestion in the, you know, Indian big cities and city centers, there are certainly experiences that can be done there and that can be translated anywhere else.
And obviously with this background in autonomous driving as well, like, you know, with the knowledge and software development that they have, it seems that they also have just the capabilities to implement it. So not just to think about it, but to implement it. Is that still a problem, that the implementation maybe costs too much money? Because of course, if you know, sell a car like the Quid, which I think goes for 3,500 euros in comparison to, you know, like just as a euro number in that kind of sense, is that what holds it back, that maybe there is no service design that has happened yet in that sense, that you can, you know, you can find a cheap way for the people to use it?
Yeah, I mean, if you think about anything autonomous, I may say that I've been using an autonomous car for the last 3 years because I had an Indian driver, and especially since they are, you know, right-hand drive, it really feels like it. Like the car is going by itself, and you know, when you sit in the passenger seat at the front of a car in India, it's just as if you were on an autonomous car in Germany. You know, any autonomous systems that you can create today can never beat the Indian driver in terms of budget. And probably in terms of creative driving also, because they are absolutely amazing. And there has been a couple of Indian Formula One driver recently, and I think there will be more because those guys are absolutely amazing.
That's fascinating to me because if you take the idea further with the autonomous cars, you know, you can go all the way back to Rolls Royce and, you know, the carriages and horses and all these kind of things. But it's interesting that you mentioned this in India. I mean, does this have an effect on how you run your design department as well? That you say, like, look, we're not just here for a product itself, but with this experience that you have, and, you know, putting aside a little bit of the financial factor, but also how you want to push your designer, or maybe how you see the development of the designers that you work with, that they are not just, you know, creating these physical spaces or these, you know, haptical exteriors, but that they need to start thinking about digital contents, like, you know, service ideas, how these products can be used. Do you see that for you personally, there's a transition towards that, or is it still exterior, interior, and then everybody has their little aisle?
Well, there's still exterior and interior, and that's the way people who like cars think, you know. But there's nothing that you could do in an autonomous car, for example, that you couldn't do as a passenger today. You know, why are we on many of those projects which are coming out today and which are deemed futuristic? There are so many things that we can apply immediately for the passenger. You know, we are talking about things which will only change the life of the driver, and yet we are promising so many things. And I'm asking why we couldn't do it already today. And with the specific experience of India, because some of the designers they are coming from very different horizons. Some are from relatively wealthy family where they have a driver, not the young guy maybe, but at least his father has a driver. And they can think in a totally different way as well in terms of what's the life in the car. It is something that is very easy to experience firsthand, and the kind of features or the kind of media interaction and all that you might want that can certainly also come from there.
Do you think that India is underrated when it comes to transportation design, car design? Because what you have just mentioned to me seems like they should actually, in terms of their knowledge, because, you know, of this, let's say the autonomous driving that to a certain degree already exists, should actually be on the forefront, and maybe should be even more implemented in the day-to-day activity of, you know, the main studios that, let's say, you have in France, or the German companies, because Mercedes is in India as well, you know, Hyundai is in India as well. Do you think they underestimate the knowledge and the background information that's already there?
Probably. I must say that the potential is definitely there, but to unleash it is really something else. I mean, even Tata just recently opened a major design center in the UK. Why would they do that? You know, while they are supposed to know so well what is their potential at home. So that's a question. You know, two years ago in Delhi Motor Show, we presented a show car that was designed by a young design student that we were training. And in that particular Delhi Motor Show, that was the only show car that had been done 100% in India. And none of the even Indian company had any show car made in India, which was quite quite surprising. So and that is certainly the consequence of the culture and so on, more than any budget consideration. Coming back to the original topic.
Yeah, yeah.
But so potential is there, but to you know, to unlock it is quite a task, really.
I can imagine. And coming back to this initial starting point of the conversation, which what's the budget? Of course, I mean, I can imagine that budget compared like France, India, maybe even Korea, where you have worked before, India is probably the lowest. So what do you do? What kind of new technologies do you pick up to be ahead of the curve and, you know, to be maybe more flexible, to really build, you know, or use your budget that you have on the highest level? I would say it almost seems like, you know, using clay is probably the most expensive one that you can do. Are you using a lot of, you know, digital tools, or how do you run your process to be as efficient as possible, both effectively, but also, of course, from a cost perspective?
Yeah, definitely the digital development is very important, because as you say, you know, to have a clay shop in India is extremely challenging, because it's a very hot country where electricity is not always working, so you can never be sure that you will have constant temperature during weeks and weeks. So for very practical reason, there are things that we cannot do, or we cannot do too much. But then knowing that, you create the shortcuts, you do more digital, you do more quick milling, quick models, you interact with Europe as well, of course. But we introduce in our process some like very very short modeling job, where we just send the modeler, the designer, to Europe for a few weeks, much less than you would take normally, but at least you can really go through sketch modeling very very quickly, and then he comes back, he has things sorted out, and you continue in a digital way. So you have to be imaginative also in the process on how you can do things without all the tools.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I can imagine if you have your, let's say, Indian-based designer, so somebody that grows up with you, grows the professional life with you, they are very much used to, you know, digital tools. They can probably, you know, do most of their modeling themselves. We still have professional modelers, but, you know, there's a much more native feeling to working digitally. Now, when you have guys on exchange or guys coming from France that maybe work less on the digital tools but more on the clay, how do they fit into the system? Does it sometimes cause, I don't want to say problems, but a little bit of a transition time for them to understand that, hey, we might have to, you know, figure this out digitally? And is this sometimes a problem that the mindset is with oftentimes European designers, because they are used to higher budgets, that they are not 100% comfortable in working only digitally?
No, I must say, first of all, when we bring European designers over, we bring people with a lot of experience, because that's the whole point of bringing them, and it works well, actually. We are always very happy, and they are always very very happy, actually. And the interaction between the experienced European designer and the fresh Indian designers is always working very very smoothly, I must say.
I saw, I think, was it 2 years ago, or like, I don't even remember, 2 or 3 years ago, you had this challenge in India where you opened it up to the students, and you brought them in, you kind of pushed them further, and they could win the prize of their own model and an internship with these kind of things. Is that a method of the future for you to build on talented local guys rather than maybe do too much exchange and really develop the guys for yourself, because you need to have this understanding of India and how the country works to really represent the cars in the best possible way, and in the end create the cars in the best possible way.
Yes, in a way it is something that we had to do, because after several years of experience we realized that it was very difficult to select people based on portfolios over there, because a great portfolio does not mean that you have a guy who can really work as a designer. You can meet some people who are probably great artists but not great designers. Also because of the way the teaching of design is done, which is very, very much based on the Bauhaus still, but maybe not totally suitable for car design. It's probably better for industrial design than for car design. And then because of this lack of, I would say, car culture, you have to teach a lot more to the younger guys than you would have to do in Europe. So at the end of the day, we set up that design academy program, because that way we could bring in a number of young guys and we could really test them in a real environment, and we could pick up the best that way, and we were then confident that we could work with them. Because otherwise you take one guy for 6 months and then you realize that he's not working for you, so you have to test another one and you end up wasting a lot of time and resources. We also spent a lot of resources on this academy program, but at least the guys that went through it, we were really confident that we could employ them.
Then let me ask you something that I personally have, looked at quite in a bit of detail over the past months, if not even like years and stuff like that. What you have just mentioned is really to understand, you're trying to find not necessarily just a stylist, but a designer as a whole, somebody who understands that design is much more than just an artistry in that kind of sense. So is this kind of generation that's coming out of the universities right now, and I'm not just talking about India, I'm talking about, let's say, a global direction, more maybe also because of this Instagram culture of the communication oftentimes with car manufacturers, more tending to become more of like an artistry or make a stylist, and that we are missing this approach of what a designer needs to do nowadays, especially when it comes to budget products, where you need to understand the craft behind design and not just, let's say, the styling behind design.
Well, I think the profession as a whole has evolved, and it's a serious job. There are so much inputs. Now, of course, the development time is much shorter, so you have to go to the point. The budget is tighter, so you have to take that into account. And there are so many new things that come into play. I mean, 20 years ago, you were not expected to be working in a multicultural environment and be working with people on a different time scale. That did not happen. That happened only, really since the beginning of this century. So the dimensions in which you are working are every time more and more. So so maybe in this sense the gap between the kids coming from school and what the professional world is expecting, that gap has maybe increased. Not that the schools are less good or more artistic than before. I think that they are also evolving with the digital tools and so on. They also have much more to teach, you know, and the young designers have much more to learn, which is quite difficult. But the design, car design world as a whole is much more demanding today than it was even 20 years ago.
Yeah, and I think it will continue that way. I mean, if we really look in the general kind of directions, you know, budgets are going to be, you know, made less. We're going to see more and more program-oriented budgets rather than, you know, budgets that are being set for entire departments. So it seems a little bit to me that the designer nowadays needs to have almost like an understanding of the budget car for anything that he does. You know, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, a hypercar or, you know, one-off or something like that, but to really understand it's not just our job to have a nice sketch, but we need to also understand the consequences that our sketches, you know, make in terms of an entire process. And I think, you know, in this environment of a budget, it becomes even more relevant, because I can imagine you would probably, I mean, obviously in your position as a manager, you can take some things away from them, but you have to send them also to engineering meetings and understand that not every sketch or not every, you know, line they draw and like not every arch that they love can be done because of because of budgets.
Yeah, sure. You, unfortunately, there is less time to experiment, and that's, I think, an issue for everybody. You have to go to the point much faster, and you have to be a problem solver much more than before. And that is something that is quite difficult. And I think the key for the future is how we will be able to keep doing advanced design, but be able to make the link between this advanced design and the regular project, the production projects. That has always been a question, you know. All the companies have been able to do fantastic show cars, and then the production car were always a deception. I think to be able to do that bridge between the concept and the production is more important than ever before.
Yeah, how do you see this developing? I mean, If I'm not mistaken, obviously at Renault in France, there's the creative department, there's the industrialization department. Do you think these have to come together to make this understanding together? Or would you say it's actually okay to have these two departments? Or where do you see the future? And where do the designers have to develop to make this transition?
Yeah, well, you cannot totally merge that, because if you merge it, we know what will happen. Everybody will fall below the production budget, and the experiment will die. So experiment is very, very important, and we have to keep it. So it has to have his own life and his own line of budget in a way, otherwise it will just be crunched like everything else. But it is, you know, how you take something and you shovel it into the production line, which is important, because we have always dreamed of off the shelf solution, but then again we are working on such tight budget and at such a speed for production projects that these off the shelf solution never exist. Or if they have been created, the first thing you discover is that they don't apply to the problem that you have to solve. So that link between advance and production, which has always been something difficult and something important, I think it is becoming more and more important.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it's maybe also, and I don't know if you agree on this one, but it could also be that we see less concept cars in the future. They stay internally, you know, they stay in a development process, and we're ending up a little bit more like, let's say, a Chinese environment, where you see the production car coming out 3 to 6 months before it's officially being released and coming off the production line. I mean, this is something that I can very well imagine, that these, you know, creative processes that are being brought out to the public with show cars and concept cars might just be in the majority stay internally anyways, and you push your marketing and your PR more towards the production cars in that sense. You know, like you leave the creative side out a little bit, so you don't put yourself into too much of a pressure situation, and then you just continue to show the production cars, and only from, you know, every year one, so every other year you go to Geneva or you go to any motor show, if they exist by then still, and show a certain kind of direction, but not as often as you do maybe nowadays.
Yeah, well, that's you touched a different question. Is, you know, with the end of the motor show, is the show car also going to end? That's an interesting question in itself. But definitely some internal studies are necessary, and those internal studies may be totally different from the show car as we know them, because then you can explore ways which are, you know, not specifically meant to appeal or to get people to dream, but which maybe are more into self challenge on different questions, and that is something quite different, actually. You know, because show cars are, at the end of the day, they are marketing objects, are things that are made to blow out the mind of the public, or to attract them, or to, you know, make them dream. If you do a show car internally, then you can ask all sorts of different questions. A show car could be the cheapest possible car you can build. That would also be possible. You know, what happened if you cut everything? Yeah. And as I said at the beginning, when is it still a car, and when does it cease to be a car and then not be acceptable anymore?
Mm-hmm. I think that's a really nice word, and like a really nice phrase to end the conversation. So Alain, I want to thank you very much for your time and for your insights. It was an absolute pleasure. But before I let you go, every guest that we have on the podcast gets three questions from me. Those are more personal questions, something to give our listeners a little bit of an idea who you are, who inspires you. Two of those are not necessarily aimed at just transportation or car design, and one of them is very much car design. So I'll start with one that is not only for the car design. Which project that you have not been a part of would you absolutely loved to be part of?
Wow. Okay. I didn't expect that one. I think the Apollo 11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the rocket that, and the project that went to the moon. I mean, that's at the time it was the absolute top. It was totally out of this world, and I think that's probably one of the most exciting projects that has ever existed.
Lovely. Number two, which designer had the biggest influence on you as a person and as a creative? And this doesn't need to be somebody you have worked with, just in general.
Just in general. Well, then I have to go back to my teachers. I think I had the great opportunity to have one trimester at the Art Center Europe with Tony Lapine.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a fantastic experience to have this guy who had done so much and had such a vision, and was also a great philosopher of design and a real car guy as well. So that's one of the people that I remember fondly.
Lovely. And last but certainly not least, if I give you a blank check, which car would you buy?
I must say, well, there's one in my garage, the other one would be the Alfa Carabo. That's my absolute dream car. I think that was one of the peak of car design.
Lovely. Well, you survived the three questions.
And thank you.
Once again, thank you very much, Alain, for taking the time. It was a lovely conversation. You gave us some really cool insights on everything. And so for you, all the best. Of course, we will certainly talk again in the future. And to all of our listeners, thank you very much for listening to yet again another Gestalten episode. And you will hear back from the Gestalten team and the Gestalten podcast very soon with a new episode. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.